Okay, let's get started. Today we're talking about accreditation, and we'll start with the IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. And the link to join the credentials community group is available at this location. I'm pasting into chat. And before that, you would need to create a W3 web account, and the link to do that is here. It's free to join community groups. And lastly, the text of the W3C community contributor license agreement is available at this link that I've pasted into IRC. Call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the CCG meetings repo. And we're not using the IRC interface to queue and everything in this call. Instead, you can use the raise hand feature, and we'll call on you. And informally, you can definitely type Q+ into chat and we'll get to you. We don't have that many people. Well, we have 18, but in general, we don't have enough activity to really cause queue problems or queue backups. Okay, let's get to introductions and reintroductions. Let me see if there's anyone new on the call. If there's anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves, please just speak up. And we could also, so let me make sure I'm not, can people hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, sure.
Perfect. I just wanted to make sure. Okay, if no one knew, I think let's move to reintroductions. And Brent, I'm not sure if I've called on you yet for reintroductions. Would you mind reintroducing yourself to the group? Brent Shambaugh.
Okay, I'm Brent Shambaugh. I'm sort of observing right now. I guess I've been around this community for a while, in and out for the past 6-7 years, I don't know. So I'm interested in learning a little bit more about what you're up to.
Great, thank you, Brent, and thank you for catching the date problem on my email. Okay, let's go on to next part of the agenda. I'm not sure if we have Anthony here yet, but I wanted to announce we have a new co-chair joining the group, and that's Anthony Camilleri. And we're excited to have him join. He's been bringing a lot of expertise from working in verifiable credentials in the EDCI framework. And so he's been really active in helping to drive the agenda so far and push forward work items. So very excited to have him join us. Okay, now let's move to the main topic, which is accreditation. And I want to start by saying that this is not any sort of very well-researched presentation on it. I think the goal is that we would want to, well, let me bring up the issue to start with. So, and I'll share my screen as well. Okay, so we had talked about the idea of dealing with accreditation as part of the modeling verifiable credentials for education spec. So Anthony called out a couple of approaches. So trusted issuer lists, VCs issued to organizations, authorizing them to issue educational credentials, trusted accreditation organization list. So, oh, there's a frowny face. Huh. Oh, that's a confused emoji. Okay. Let's see. So Jeannie responded with some CTDL terms, which were really useful. I did a little poking around as well to see what are some different approaches that are used. And I wanted to do a presentation on it. And this is more to get feedback from the community, see if there's other approaches that I'm not familiar with. And we can talk about how to move forward this issue in the modeling doc. So I'm going to switch to this presentation. I'm hoping that you can see this accreditation screen. Speak up and let me know if not, and I'll reshare.
Looks good.
Okay. Do you want to send the link again? Okay. So I did want to start with a non-EDU use case that I was familiar with in terms of accreditation, and that is using verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, and all the standards that we're working on. And the example is KYC, or verification of individuals acting on behalf of an organization. So the use case comes from a pilot between Consensus Uport and Glyph. And I understand actually that I think it was Sovereign did something similar. So I think the ideas are similar. I just wrote this up before I was aware of that pilot. So the Global Legal Entity Identifier Foundation, or GLIFE, they issue legal entity identifiers. It's gonna get increasingly awkward with acronyms, so I apologize, which is a unique 20-digit identifier for companies. And the idea is to use this to reduce cost and complexity of business verification. Specifically, what this prototype focused on was the idea of combining these legal entity identifiers and verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, to enable rapid verification of a person acting in an official role. So I have a link to the Medium article that this is based on.
Hey, Kim. So GLIFE made a major announcement last Thursday. So that they're moving forward with the VLEI, which is their verifiable LEI, and starting in January. And it's going to be using verifiable credentials, and they've got a big budget for it. A couple of us have been engaged by GLIFE to push this forward. And I put a little note in the thing here that the Consensus Uport POC was one of five different POCs that they did under a partnership with Deloitte to help them basically explore the entire space. And then they just made their announcement on Thursday that they are going to move forward. They're not actually going to use any of those five networks. They did Ethereum through the Consensus Uport. They did something with Alastria, which uses Quorum. They did something on Sovereign. They did a couple of others. In the end, they decided to use Carry to become their own root of trust. But the beautiful thing is they're going to be using standard verifiable credentials, and that all begins, they're about to embark on a big open source development initiative. Everything they're doing is going to be fully open source, and they're going to start dumping a bunch of resources into it in a few weeks, beginning in January.
Great. So the idea here, the general flow is the same. And so this is, this is just an example. This is an example of how verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers and all of this can be used in that framework. So the flow that was used in this prototype was that GLIFE accredits a local operating unit. And then that's a verifiable credential that allows it to issue LEIs. So these legal entities then can issue role credentials to, oh wait, let me see. Okay, sorry. Yeah, so then those are issued to legal entities, which are companies, who then can issue role credentials to people acting in official roles. So that could be someone who is, you know, a corporate officer who can use the role credential to sign and submit regulatory filings. So then regulators can view and verify the signatures of the submitted documents. So not only, I think the typical flow that we think of, or the typical like end game of verifiable credentials that we sort of show in use cases, are just sort of focusing on this last verifiable credential. But these sorts of end-to-end flows are really key to establishing the trust that we would need. And so this is sort of a good general accreditation example. Let me see if we, okay. So now coming on to CTDL, I wanted to start with an example that was linked, that Jeannie linked to, in terms of the sort of how you would approach accreditation in CTDL. So there's an example provided about a dental assisting certificate. And so what this is doing, and we'll see this in a friendlier graphical view, but it's basically saying, you know, Santa Rosa Junior College offers this dental assisting certificate. And then it, we won't go, we'll look at the graphical view, but we want to say various things about the, you know, the accreditation of the junior college, et cetera. So let's look at this view. So we're saying Santa Rosa Junior College offers credential over here, or certificate rather. We're calling it credential in our terms, but that's a certificate in CTDL terms. This is the key leg here, accredited by. So there's a quality assurance organization. The name is American Dental Association. And off over here as well, we have this, you know, competency that's required. So in this is just spelling out the RDF triples and, you know, in the full detail. I included this in case it wasn't readable, just given our experience with tiny fonts last time. Let's see. The other thing that I wanted to call out, so Jeannie listed here some terms from CTDL, so CE terms, accredits, approves, recognizes, regulates, revokes, which seemed like a good list of the kinds of terms that we need in accreditation. And so this is actually this example, this dental example is taken from here. Also, these action classes looked really useful. Accredited by is definitely the most pertinent one. Let's see. And I thought that there is some, let me see, let's look at these actions real fast. I was just looking at Lewis's comment. Oh wait, that was the wrong one. Action classes. Okay, I thought, so we have revoke. Yeah, I'm not sure if I see suspend, I see revoke. We can come back to that comment. So let's see. So there's that. The other example that I saw kind of in the wild of what is being used is the Open Badges Accreditation Extension. And this is an extension on the issuer. And so this is these cases that an issuer wants to include detailed information about an accrediting organization as it pertains to the program or badge. So the previous dental example that we saw in the Open Badges case, I actually didn't tailor this example to that, but instead of the way it's modeled in CTDL, you know, it would be issuer, and then effectively you would add this under the issuer type, but concepts are very, very similar. Let's see what else. I think, okay, so those were the main contexts that I wanted to provide. Let me stop sharing for just a second, come back to see if there's any comments or discussion. If you do have comments, it's a good time to, let's see. Okay, so we have a Q+. Okay, Adrian.
Sorry, I just came in a few minutes ago, but my question is, I'm familiar with notaries and vaccination cards where the verifiable credential is linked for audit purposes to an accredited other party, right? So the doctor that signs, a vaccination card has to have a number that's published somewhere, presumably saying they're accredited to do vaccinations. A notary has a stamp that has a number that says they are accredited to notarize a credential. And I'm curious whether either of the two models you are talking about or both could be equally useful in those very common contexts, but they're not educational in any sense of the word.
Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder if, let me see if we have a queue right now. I don't see any hands raised. Oh, great, Nate, I was gonna call on you to talk to your comment as well. So yes, Nate, you're up.
Yeah, so there's a couple different types of relationships in play, and then there's a few ways to describe those relationships. In the Glyph example, we saw a relationship, the accrediting relationship, saying, I accredit this organization to be able to do something, expressed as a verifiable credential. That record would be portable and verifiable in using similar mechanisms to the verifiable credentials ultimately issued by, say, a educational institution. In the open badges and CTDL examples, we have a sort of two different processes that we're looking at. One is that there's a organization, a college maybe, issuing verifiable credentials to students to recognize educational achievements. But this educational institution is accredited and they have an accreditor, but that accreditor is not yet issuing verifiable portable records of that accreditation. So what we have in the Open Badges extension and in the CTDL vocabulary is the ability for an organization to describe its accreditor. This college is accredited by this, you know, Northwest body of accreditors that has local trust within the system. And so as we think about accreditation, we need to make sure we don't mix up these two different types of things, and then also decide what we want to actually accomplish. Do we want to just allow our issuers to describe what organizations they are accredited by in the real world so that you can phone up the accreditor and ask them about it? Or do we want to provide the mechanisms for accreditation to also be represented as a verifiable credential alongside the sort of core verifiable credentials representing degrees, competencies, et cetera?
Exactly. And I wonder if the, Anthony says ideally both. I was thinking that originally from the framing of it that only one of them, which is not necessarily the navigability all the way back to the original source of trust. But yes, ideally it would be both. Adrian, you're right. We need to deal with audit in either case. I think, using just the one, the idea of saying I am accredited by X, where, you know, some relying party or verifying party knows, they understand that, that they recognize that that is a valid accreditation body is fine. But then I guess the interesting thing here is that we can trace it back further so that, you know, if there were entities acting on behalf of some other organization or even just individuals within an organization, it does provide sort of this more fine-grained ability to audit. So, I mean, at the same time, assuming that those verifiable, traceable, verifiable credentials exist does sound like possibly scope creep and something that we don't want to have a dependency on. So I think that's important clarification. Anthony, Anthony's on the call. He missed the announcement and the excitement of everyone acknowledging his co-chair addition. So I wanted to welcome Anthony again and welcome him as co-chair. So Anthony, I was wondering if you could talk, you had mentioned the accreditation use case. I'm curious for your responses to this.
So I mean, I'm just going to mention two things for the moment, because actually I'm going to sound quite a bit like Nate here, in the sense that I have seen both models in the wild. So for example, the EBSI use case in Europe, which Louis is representing here, is actually designing a verifiable credential for accreditation standard. And that's something which I assume they might be able to contribute to the group. On the other hand, we also have all sorts of registries ranging from national registries to private ones, such as, let's say, the triple accreditation of business degrees, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we would need a way to represent all of these. Generally, I would say that we maybe wouldn't want to do anything overly fancy, where we would be saying, for example, proving within a verifiable credential that an issuer has an accreditation, that we might, let's say, or at least at first always link to a registry. But if that registry, let's say, is a dumb registry or is a registry of verifiable credentials, I think we probably could support that with the same metadata fields.
With what? The metadata fields?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, I don't see this being too complicated, in the sense that if you're thinking about accreditation, you're basically saying institution or program is accredited by, is accredited for, and URI of proof of that registration from some registry.
Right. And I think Carrie calls out a really good point here that... Okay, so there's these two separate use cases. Yes, we're seeing them both in the wild. And Carrie mentioned we need to make sure there's issuers and inspectors need to know the difference. That part is key, I think, to call out in this document. Carrie, is there anything, I saw a few good comments from you. Is there anything else you want to speak to?
No, but I do think there would be confusion about this. And I was really glad that Nate brought this up. Because sometimes situations may need one, they may need both, they may need, you know, one or the other, right? So we do want to be really clear, I think.
Yeah, I like that. I want to capture that in the issue. And then actually, Simone, can I have you speak to the EBSI link that you added? Let's see, let me pull that up in the meantime. Well, it's not coming up. Okay, it's just taking a while to load. Okay, so we'll come back to that. I think those are important points to capture. I think I was also, she's unmuting. I understand. Let's see. I was also curious to find out. Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Kim. May I? I can share my screen, but now not. Can I share my screen, Kim?
Oh, yes. If not, let me know, because I have the site up as well.
Okay, so I think you should give me some rights, maybe.
Oh.
I'm not sure if Simone was going to talk about this, but just what I can share is just what Anthony's told is what we are implementing in EBCI.
Yes, that'd be great. And actually, I don't know how to change permissions during the call. I might have to do it afterwards, but I'll share my screen, which is like this.
Yeah, but I think that, this is a public the public site, and this is the documentation related to EBCI version 1, and it is in EBCI version 2 that we have made the great impact about governance and about the points that Anthony also talked about how the one legal entity becomes a trusted issuer, and how the what we call the accreditation body, that's the one that will approve the legal entity, the educational institution request to be registered into the trusted issuer. The accreditation body will approve that and will issue what we call the accreditation credential to the educational institution, and all the correspondent registry, so the trusted issue registry, the trusted accreditation registry, and also the trusted schema registry will be involved into the into the verifiable attestation, to verifiable accreditation credentials. Sorry. If I can, so I think that it would be better to share the latest documentation. I can just make an export now and share it with you, Kim, or just we can upload it to GitHub as you prefer.
Let's see. Let me try one second to see if I can.
I can do it now. All right.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. So let me. Okay. So let me show my desktop. Okay, can you see now?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so let me just now try go back. Okay, because I think that there are at least three sites related to EBCI. The one that Simone shared is the one public available, but relates to the specifications of EBCI version 1. And there's also some medium space that requires a free account, a free EU login account. There you can get access to some the specifications between the internal kitchen, let me say like that, and the public site. But this is what we have defined here in EBCI version 2. And here at the end, what we introduce is governance for credit credentials. So first of all, some what we call the accreditation body must exist. The accreditation body is the one that will then let education institutions be registered into the trusted teacher registry. And for that, after check with member states roles, if on success on completion, the accreditation body will issue that accreditation credential to the educational institution, and all the registry will be updated. Here, I think we have a more deeper view on how the use case governance relates to the self-sovereign identity components or trusted registries and main actors. Okay, so the EOS is the ASIF onboard service. That's the like the trusted registry accreditation. It's just a service that helps natural persons, legal entities to onboard on self-sovereign identity. And here we have the different roles that a natural person or legal entity can adopt on the use case, in our case, on the diploma use case, on education. And then also these main actors for governance are required. And after that accreditation credential has been issued, the educational institutions are entitled to they become trusted teachers, and they are entitled to issue the specific type of credentials, because we can play with all these things. So you can be a trusted teacher for any kind of or a specific level of education or just in a concrete degree on that, okay? I can export all this information, so we can share how all the details of how these things are done and how registries relates to the roles of the actors and so on. If it can help, we can do it, of course.
Yeah, this is great. And I just had a couple of questions.
Yeah.
The schemas for this, are they part of, are they just some EBSI schemas, or are they sort of external ones?
These, in fact, is the Europass learning data model.
Okay.
That, as you know, today they are XML plus shadows-based, but here in EBCI, we are going to serialize it to JSON. To JSON, that's it. But it's not, there's no other schema. It's the Europass learning data model. I think it's the last name, Anthony, I'm right? No, the right. Europass learning model, I think.
Because I wanted to come back quickly to Adrian's earlier question about, you know, use outside. At first I was looking at it and several aspects of the model seemed nice in general, but it does seem like this one is also targeting education use cases, even if it can be, even if it looks model-wise applicable more broadly. Are you, let's see. Well, that's something we can come back to in general. I saw a good, so I do like this. I think we should capture this you know, sort of one of our options as well. Mm-hmm. Anthony, I like this proposal, the idea that we would say a must requirement of referencing an accreditation record, or I don't even know. I think referencing an accreditation record, does that sound like even a stronger requirement than say what either CTDL or Open Badges support? Because they're sort of self-claimed. I guess it would, the what I'm seeing there is that you would say, well, at least in the Open Badges case, you would say issuer makes some claim about the issuer, but it's not clear that that has any sort of, you know, signature or any sort of enforcement. Like, I think it would be expected for the relying party to independently verify that. So I think this must requirement might be even higher bar than what I'm seeing there.
Maybe I'll just say two words on this very quickly. I'm a little bit biased here because I did spend the part of my professional career tracking down diploma mills, and it's impressive the kind of infrastructure there exists. I mean, fake accreditation bodies, the whole lot. So I would say that accreditation records are only valuable if they're audited. And to make them auditable, I think some sort of public registry, at least a URI for the accreditation records, should really be the base level for entry. I mean, I don't know of any reputable accreditation scheme, public or private, that doesn't at least have records showing who is accredited somewhere on the internet, even if they're not computer readable. So I think a URI is quite straightforward to do in this case. But I said that's, let's say, an opinion from my professional experience.
Great, yeah. I wonder what the reality is in the US. I should know this probably, but you know, I don't know if those are public. If anyone knows, it'd be nice to add yourself to the queue. And Adrian is on the queue to ask about privacy of the accreditation registry, which is probably related to what I'm getting at. Adrian?
Yes, it's exactly that. And I have seen both. So in the US case, you have, for instance, the NPI number for physicians, which is publicly available. And you also have the DEA number for physicians, which is not publicly available, not because it's not public information, but because it's part of a business model that the government used in order to publish the DEA number registration. So I am extremely interested in, for instance, what goes on in the European context or any of these contexts as to this particular issue. It seems to be the same in education. And I'm just wondering, you know, the absence of oracles, of public oracles for accredited membership is a huge problem in general. And I'm wondering if in education, this is part of the problem. I'm sorry, I don't attend these calls very often, but to me, turning access to the registry into a business model seems suboptimal, but maybe education is different than medicine.
Yeah, these are good points. I mean, let's see. So I think obviously ideally in my world, these would all be public. I guess worst case, even if it is part of the business model and relying parties would be expected to have some relationship with the entity that makes it available. As long as they're able to do that through linked data, then that would satisfy the requirement. You know, assuming that would, in that case, that would be, you know, linked data that they would have to then authenticate to get, which seems kind of counter to the goals of this, but maybe it works. But yeah, I don't know what the case is. Carrie, is the accreditation for the issuer of the credential? I thought it was for I'm not sure if you're asking in general, but I would think it's for accreditation for the issuer to issue a category of credentials or sort of, yeah, a set of credentials.
You know, I want to clarify a little bit here. Is the CTDL, the accreditation is for the crediting organization, not necessarily the issuing organization, because with CTDL, they can be separate. In open badges, the accreditation, the issuer and the program is the same, right? It assumes that the issuer and the credential creator is the same organization. There's no separation between the two. So I think there's a difference between accrediting who creates the credential, who creates the school or the program, I'm using school loosely there, or is the actual issuer being accredited. So for an example, there is, I use this one quite a bit, is the American Red Cross, right? They have one CPR program. I don't know if you would call it accredited, but they sort of endorse, right, local deliver, like, you know, educators on that program. And so what would that be in this credential? If someone were to get a first aid credential or CPR credential from their local school, but it was an American Red Cross, what would the accreditation be? That may not be the best example, but that's what I had at the top of my head.
These are really good points. And I think that this is an example of, I think with the accreditation, all this conversation is pointing to, we'll just have to be very specific about which use cases are in scope. And ideally, you know, not lock out certain use cases as well. I think it's even more complicated than I had originally thought, which I already knew is complicated. Let me see if there's any discussion to... Anyone else have anything to add? I see some conversations in the chat. Brent?
Seems like an obvious question, but I'll ask it. Why is there emphasis on specific use cases over others? Or are you trying to, is it about the vocabulary that you're concerned with, not the underlying mechanics, or I don't know.
Right. I think it is less about the vocabulary than, so I think it's just a huge space to navigate. And especially when we talk about certain framework or like schema.org, for example, when we talk about using schema.org terms in some way versus the other. And then we talk about the idea of needing to add terms to it. We just have to be very specific to make sure we're sketching out which use cases we want to address, because that in some cases will argue for one approach versus the other. And it's basically like, we don't want to over target one approach and, you know, sort of make up a solution in the absence of requirements, I guess. So it's really like trying to get all the verifiable credentials, you know, data model mapped to the different, you know, frameworks that we're trying to use here most efficiently and ideally in the most forward-looking way. And I think also capturing the use cases helps call out, like, if there's any, you know, if there are any shortcomings or oversights in the use cases, then it's easier for people to say, like, oh, you're overlooking this or that. So that's my take on it. Keith, you're up.
Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to think through this conversation. I'm just trying to think more about the use case conversation. Like, you know, I've shown my degree or my educational credentials in job context many times, but I don't think they ever check if they're accredited. The institution is accredited. I've also applied for like master's degrees. I don't think they ever checked that my degrees were accredited. I understand in certain, like if I was applying to be an engineer with the Professional Engineering Association or something, they would check that it's accredited. Certain certifications, they would check. Maybe they would check if it was accredited or not, but I'm just trying to understand this use case in the US context about when organizations really want to make sure that your issuing institution is accredited. Just because I think that would help the conversation to kind of really lock down some different use cases.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on that. Please, other people, add yourself to the queue who have more expertise than I do. But I think one of the most compelling ones I can think of is that, so maybe it's not just this sort of end credential that we're talking about. It's more relevant for the idea of the, you know, the smaller credentials and competencies gained along the way. And, you know, maybe they should be checking the accreditation. So I when I lived in California, okay, so this is an example where I probably shouldn't talk about this, but I applied for a job because I lived in California. I was able to see the background check run on me. They weren't able to confirm anything I said about myself, but I got the job anyway. So, you know, in this case, I like to think that I was, you know, I was honest about everything I said, but it's just really, you know, there is a lot of fraud in, you know, in education. Like it happens, someone at MIT, one of the MIT administrators lied about having a doctorate. Like it happens all the time. So the stakes are very different, but so there's the negative impact side, but then I think there's also the positive one of saying like, you know, if someone without, you know, fancy degree claim can instead, you know, prove all these individual competencies that make them eligible for a job. And if the relying parties have trust in that process, then we're opening up new pathways. So those are two paths I was thinking of. Adrian, I think you're up next.
Right. So this was kind of my point earlier about it's easier to understand and pick between these models if you do it from the point of view of audit, because the audit makes the whole process work because the audits are statistical. And so as long as the credential is expensive, and you know, education and credentialing is expensive, then the parties are loath to be audited because if they're caught even once, they lose a lot of value, the signers, you know, the notaries, the doctor. So I think this is the general solution in the world, is what I'm saying, is to deal with it as a probabilistic audit, rather than trying to decide in which case is something sensitive, because you're going to be the admissions director at MIT, and in other cases, it doesn't matter.
Anthony, I think you're up next.
Yeah, so I just wanted to share a few different examples of use cases since it was asked. So a couple of different ones. So first of all, in Europe, if you take any degree cross-nationally, we actually need to verify accreditation. It's basically, I'm simplifying, but it's basically legislation. A second example, if you take an MBA, the gold standard of MBAs globally is something which is called being triple accredited, which means you're accredited by the AACSB, you're accredited by Equus, and I'm forgetting what the third organization is. I think there's 300 or 400 MBA schools globally that are listed. And basically, if you're from a triple accredited business school, you get access to the top jobs. Now, maybe the first 50 schools on that list are, globally renowned brands. The 350 that are under it, you probably would be wanting to highlight to your employer that your school is triple accredited as you're going. A third example, which is, let's say, completely different, is when we start coming to the MOOC platforms. And there are various kinds of, let's say, MOOC accreditation going around, everything from inclusion within something like Coursera to the e-excellence type MOOCs in Europe, and there's a few others I know about. And again, let's say the big number of MOOCs out there, you also might want to show that, listen, your MOOC came through some sort of accreditation on a lower one. Very, very last example here. We also have plenty of examples of, let's say, employers who will accept graduates for certain, let's say, very vocational qualifications if it comes from schools that have received certain types of accreditation from business chambers. And again, if you're showing this on your credential, it just basically saves a lot of administration all the way through to verify this stuff manually.
Thank you, Anthony. And I think to Keith's point, this probably does trace to the idea of making sure our use cases are pushed through even further. So, use cases in the sense of instead of expressing it just, relying party wants to verify issuer has blah accreditation, push it back even farther to, some of the precise scenarios that Anthony's talking about. Keith, you're up.
Yeah, I thought those were great scenarios. And I think the question for me is then, for whatever mechanism that we come up with for this, I think I always look at it, how can it be ingested in a very automated way? So maybe to use your great MBA example, I submit a job and I have my MBA as part of my resume. How can that just pop up in the recruiter's window that this is an accredited institution? Because I would not expect that recruiter who's looking at 50 applications that day is going to go digging into every institution I think it's where I kind of stumble on CDTL. I don't think they're going to go to the CDTL page and read about the accreditation or phone the accreditor. I don't think, and if it's done through a verifiable credential, then I guess also like how would we ingest that in an automated way? So it's displayed in a very transparent way to the recruiter who, again, is looking at 50 applications that day.
If anyone wants to talk to that, please add yourself to the queue. I think, my personal thoughts again, is that, what credential CTDL has right now is a lot of the raw material that we need. I think a lot of the pilots that T3, for example, are working towards are sort of about, so CTDL, credential engine registry, the data is exposed in a machine readable way. I think that you're right, like relying parties don't necessarily know that that's there or to look for that or similarly with any other framework. But I think that what some pilots are talking about is actually building the infrastructure to help make that more readily available. So, and it's not even that they would be able to inspect or confirm everything, but at least if there's some amount of verification that they can get out of the way in Deeply Inspect, then that's providing some amount of verification. I think that I think the general answer is what we're talking about more is building, or not specifically in scope of this task force, but we're talking about enabling people to build the tools that would allow them to do that. Let's see. I see a few things in chat. Does anyone have anything they want to add on record? Victoria, verification process, time consuming, complex. Yes.
Hey, Kim, this is Carrie.
Oh, yeah, Carrie. Go ahead.
I hear some great information coming from each of us. We all have like these experiences and the assumptions about what the use cases are. I think we have found in the past with education credentials that we can back ourselves into a corner by not thinking of the full scenarios, like not getting a full scope and getting stuck there, which is problematic for adoption, right? So I would suggest we try not to be anecdotal about what we're trying to come up with in any of these discussions, and that we actually try and do some research to support what is needed and not rush through it.
Excellent. Yeah, and I think to your point, Carrie, the goal of this group is two things. We want to unblock pilots so people can get started right now. So I think in some cases, I want to reflect that in the modeling document that we're working on. So I think, maybe there's certain use cases that are too complex to put into that, but and they would be follow-up work. But I think, we can version our schemas here. I think we want to enable pilots. We want to test and learn, but we also want to set the expectation that, this is a task force and a community group. These aren't standards yet, but we're trying to build up to something that we might be able to recommend that a group takes on. So, let me see if we have any other comments or questions. I think we're getting pretty close to time. There's a lot of information, a lot of ground that we covered that I want to distill into the accreditation issue. That is going to take a little bit of time to sort of assimilate that feedback, but I'll do that so that we can then kind of come up with a more refined approach. Adrian, you're up.
I have a question. As I understand it, schools in general treat their credentials as a form of toxic waste, in the sense that they pay intermediaries in order to handle the verification process rather than doing it themselves. So to the extent that they're paying somebody else to do this, that's why I use that analogy. Is this common in education around the world? Is it unique to the US? And are we trying to change this in some way?
I like this toxic waste thing. Yes, national student clearinghouse. My understanding is that, well, definitely in the US, that perception is correct. I think that we are also trying to, chip away or sort of enable trust, enable a visibility and auditability into that. Anthony, you're up.
Yes, I'll try and answer that question from a European perspective. And to be honest, we have every model imaginable in Europe. So we've got some places like Norway that actually have national student clearinghouses. We've got other places like parts of the UK and Ireland that the common practice is to source this out to private companies for verification. And we have countries where the institution continues verifying its own credentials.
And also where if the institution closes, your credentials basically lose any value. So I think every model actually exists in the wild at the moment.
And Victoria, you're up.
Yeah, sure. So I want also share some experiences. We find out when we pitch into the schools and when we talk into the admissions. So like also back to the questions, in China, the process is also the same. We always would like to have a third party acting as an agency to verify all the credentials, also verifying the schools. So the fact we find out is like, schools doesn't want to take that risk to saying I am the issuer and also the verifier. That just take too much credibilities of them as a school. So everybody agree a third party to do the verification process so they can get rid of this part of the credibilities. I am just a school. I'm capable of teaching. I'm issuing credentials. That's it. So if you want to verify everything, let's just agree on a third party to do that for everybody. So that is pretty much a fair game at this point. And also for us as the service provider, which add like additional layer, a party will be on the process. But I think just based on our experiences, the third party at this point is very hard to get rid of because all the service providers as a vendors, even us, we're not trustable agency, at least at this point, not trustable by the government. So if even our technology right now is ready to provide this kind of service, can bring the issuers and the verifier and also degree holders all together, but still the same thing, like one institution trusts you per platform, but then another institution may not. So at this point, just get rid of agencies very, very hard.
Right. These are great points. We are 1 minute away from time, and this is a fantastic conversation here today. Thank you, everyone, for joining. And I guess the next couple of weeks will be canceled for holidays, but it's been a great year. Thank you, everyone, for your great for your participation. And looking forward to starting the new year with our new co-chair, Anthony, and have a great holiday season, everyone.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks, everybody. Great holidays.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.